everyone. Welcome to the HR Works podcast brought to you by HR Daily Advisor. I'm your host, Bianca Heron, content manager here at HRDA. The HR Works podcast provides clear, relevant, and actionable information on topics that matter to you, the HR professional. When you're armed with the best practices and strategies to attract, retain, and engage top talent and delivering exceptional service to your organization, HR just works. Our topic for today's episode is all about superpowers. And no, this has nothing to do with Marvel. Today, rather, it's all about how people leaders can acquire what my guest calls HR superpower. I'm joined by Darcy McKay, SVP of HR and Client Services at Rippling. Before we get into this wonderful world of HR superpower, can you just tell us more about the work that you do and the team that you currently oversee at Rippling, please?
Yeah, happy to. I essentially oversee all things people and places at Rippling. So that means the entire set of HR functions, including programs, your classic HRBPs, compensation, recruiting, as well as real estate and workplace.
Awesome. Thank you. And now getting into this wonderful world of superpowers here. What is HR superpower? And how did you come about this superpower?
Well, it's a great question. I can't claim to have any superpowers, just for the record. I think from my perspective in answering that, it helps to sort of go back and think about what HR has suffered from historically. And then it sort of puts, I think, the HR's potential in the modern day context in perspective. So HR historically has been a very reactive function within organizations. Essentially, HR has been what I would call order takers instead of order shapers. It's a function that in most companies, not at Rippling, but in most companies doesn't generate revenue. It's not running a P&L. And I think historically, HR leaders have not had a business voice. Some people call that, you know, they haven't had a seat at the table. So HR has often come forward to respond to requests of the business that are fairly transactional in nature, to hire people, to terminate people, to help with learning and development programs, things like that. And HR can also come forward with things around helping to improve the employee experience or perhaps reducing legal risk. But they tend to be things that are quite myopic to HR. And so said differently, they're often articulated without putting into context the business and like, where is the business value in what we're putting forward? And it's kind of a classic example that I've experienced are L&D programs that are just the really smart L&D people who want to put forth learning programs because they sound great and they make people happy. But like, what is the actual business impact on that learning program? So what I tend to think about, because my background is actually in business and not HR, I spent a couple of decades running very large global P&Ls, and then I was pulled into the HR function during that time. I kind of come at it from the lens of, for example, what is the profit or revenue opportunity cost of a vacant seat, for example, as opposed to just like, we need to look at recruiting metrics. It's like, okay, well, what is the cost to the organization of not filling that seat or not filling that seat with a really high caliber athlete? How are we measuring the cost of turnover? You can really actually measure the direct and indirect cost of turnover. How are we thinking about the inefficiency of the administrative and busy work that HR professionals are often consumed by? And we can kind of get into the inefficiency of systems and all of that later. But ultimately, I think for me, the bottom line is if you work for a for-profit company, HR's job is to ensure that your talent is a competitive advantage in the market. So when you ask the question of what is HR's superpower, to me, HR is in this incredibly privileged position of having a vantage point, of being able to see the business and talent within the organization from all angles. So it should have a deep understanding of the business context and the impact of their work on the business. So from my point of view, the best HR leaders understand how the business is performing, where it's growing, where it's struggling. HR understands who the top performers are, where they've come from, what they aspire to, and how are we moving them forward in their career growth. And then ultimately, where is the business heading? Kind of that classic Wayne Gretzky quote around, we don't skate to where the puck is, we skate to where the puck is going. And so where is the business headed? And is the talent that we have right now capable of driving the business to where we want to go? So HR's superpower, I think, is in that vantage point and being able to articulate the value and the strategy of what they're engaged in terms that the business can understand.
That was wonderful. You touched on the point that I was going to make next. It sounds like HR pros must understand the business that they serve. That's the crux of it all.
Yeah, I think it's hard to be in an HR function if you don't understand the business that you're serving. You don't, it's hard to understand, like, how do you know who the best athlete is that you're trying to recruit if you don't understand exactly what they're going to be doing in the business and the nuances of what the business needs? You know, you may have a great understanding of what the sales profile looks like for someone in the United States, but if your business is growing in Germany, what are the characteristics and attributes of that athlete that you're looking for to recruit to launch sales in Germany, for example? And I think that oftentimes HR professionals are so busy just doing this kind of reactive work, it's hard for them to get out into the business and actually learn from it. So I know that when I have been in HR functions in a couple of different organizations, I've done both the teaching of what the business is, as well as being a student of the business. So I had a situation where I felt that some of my recruiters were not necessarily understanding some of the technical aspects of what they were recruiting for in terms of HVAC expertise in the market. And I've used this example before, but we were looking for very specific kinds of HVAC engineers to be able to equip and prepare and maintain critical equipment within hospital systems. And so the recruiters who were working on this didn't really understand how HVAC systems work. And frankly, HVAC engineers are not really great at putting together resumes. And so we went out and we actually looked at what HVAC systems were doing in the context of a hospital system and what it was doing to keep patients safe. We toured the NICU units so we could see the babies that were just born who were being supported by good quality air control. And that made all the difference to the recruiters who all of a sudden understood a bit more about what HVAC systems do and in their role in critical systems. But they were also able to articulate the why do we do what we do to their potential candidates and in terms of the importance of their work. When I got to Rippling, I'm not a software engineer by background, so I had to become the student. Mm-hmm. And so I sat down and spent some time with our engineers here to understand exactly how they are working their code and what kinds of problems they're trying to solve in an engineering environment to keep Rippling, you know, as the standard of integrated workforce management software. And so one of the things I did is sat down with an engineer and he showed me how he writes code and how he posts it to GitHub and how they look at publishing code and committing code. And I had heard these terms before, but to actually see him write the code and see him edit the code and see how GitHub tracks the chain of edits and then commits was really powerful to me, so that it took it out of this vernacular that I was hearing in a room and actually saw an engineer at work doing it. So getting out into the business and understanding is within HR's reach. It just takes a little bit of time and a little bit of commitment to get out there and say, hey, listen, I'd love to learn more about that. And ultimately, it makes us more effective at our jobs.
Absolutely. I love that whole mindset about, of course, becoming a student. Of course, what we're hearing, in the market itself over the past year with workforces and other people leaders that I've spoken with, it's about continuous learning.
Yeah, I would say I'm definitely a continuous learner and a forever student in that regard, but I try to do my best.
Of course. Now, for HR pros who want to understand the business that they serve, one key here is studying the functional success metrics and using KPIs as a way to deepen understanding about how to build that workforce for their particular business needs. Can Can you talk about that a bit, please?
You know, the key to me in getting to a superpower and removing the obstacles is really being able to work with efficient systems that allow you to see the business as a whole and especially employees as a whole. Mm-hmm. And in my experience over the last couple of decades, HRBPs in particular, but many aspects of HR are really hamstrung by these really inefficient systems. We've had lots of point solutions emerge over the last decade that go super, super deep into something specific like expense management or an ATS or a compensation system, but make it extremely cumbersome, if not impossible, to compile a holistic view of the employee. And yet, when you look at the employee's perspective and their experience, they want one seamless experience of their first encounter with the company's brand in the marketplace, to how they're being sourced and recruited into that ATS system, to how they're being onboarded, who their manager is, how their IT kit gets provisioned, what sort of access to credit cards or spend controls they have, to the L&D programs that are assigned to them and the career goals as they migrate through an organization and change jobs, change compensation levels, potentially move borders, and so get into different tax regimes. Employees want to know that their company is actually looking at them holistically and planning accordingly. And in fact, the manager wants the same darn thing, right? Like the manager has the burden of dealing with all of these different point solutions and systems that organizations have often invested in, but not connected or connected poorly or in kind of a clunky way. And so there's an enormous amount of work that the manager experiences in trying to figure out, like, how do I onboard this person? Like, what's the data that they inputted when they first came on board? And did they state things that they were interested in their career journey? And have we actually mapped out what additional skills they need to have? And gosh, when it comes time to a review, how painful is that? Like, right now, we at Rippling are in the middle of our compensation and performance review cycle. When I'm evaluating my employees as a manager, I want to be able to understand, when did she join the company? What career steps has she taken in the last year or two? How has her compensation changed? What have her last performance ratings looked like? In this review, what did her 360 say? So I want to see what her direct reports have reported in terms of her upward review. I want to see what the peer reviews look like. I want to be reminded of what the heck I wrote in the last cycle or in ad hoc feedback into the tool. And I want to see what L&D programs she's been assigned to, what she's taken, if there's any pulse survey around engagement. I want the full picture of her as I sit down to write her formal review. Not to say that there's not interstitial feedback that's given, but that's presented to me too. I'm lucky. I work for Rippling, so I have one place to go for all of that to understand exactly what she's doing and how she's being evaluated and what she's, you know, what her career trajectory has been. But companies who don't use integrated software have to go compile that manually. Gosh, was that filed in an email? Like, who sent me their upward review? Was that in a system? How do I pull from the ATS data? Then I've got to go to the compensation. So what typically happens is that a business manager goes to HR and says, like, hey, I need help. Can you compile all this? Or can you send me all the files or resend me the files? And HR's work is then going back and producing things that technology can actually surface quite readily. And so this, you know, in today's era, like, we have software to be able to do this for us and that can help not only enhance the employee experience, which is reflective of the brand of the company, but also make the role of managers and HR incredibly more efficient. So when you get to those KPIs, right, you've got a much more efficient and effective path to kind of hit the metrics that you're looking for. And HR can focus and managers can focus on where assessing talent and ensuring talent is most productive and making sure that we're generating sales and keeping customers happy as opposed to the busyness of administrative work.
You talked about how Rippling has integrated software, so you're able to do all these amazing things to enhance your employee experience and you don't have to keep track of so many things. For organizations who do not have integrated software, what advice can you give them, a first step to enhance their employee experience? What can they do? And also, of course, to make their managers better as well.
Well, I think the choices are you continue to lean on manual work, you know, compiling all of that data from different systems and curating it into a point of view that you can then hand to the manager. Second option is building cross integration across point solutions. So investing in technology that will help pull from various point solutions. And then a third option is just moving over to a more integrated workforce management tool that will help you do all that in a much easier way. And frankly, empower your managers to do it themselves. Because the manager shouldn't have to go to HR to get that information. It should be curated and made available to managers themselves. So if you're a CEO or a CFO or a CXO of an organization out there, I would think of this as an investment to liberate your managers and your HR team to do what they really need to do, which is the core work of the business and growing the business rather than on administrative tasks. And if I'm a head of HR, I look at this and say, there's an easy value proposition that I can take to my CTO or my CFO or whomever, the CEO, and say, this will allow our HR team to grow more efficiently. In other words, as the company grows, HR will need to invest less in G&A and overhead as a proportion to overall top line growth, because we can do what we can do and more with fewer HR bodies. And that is a really powerful message. And I don't think it's one that HR professionals are used to articulating. It's a bold thing to be able to say, look, I aspire to do more with less, but HR professionals have the opportunity to do that.
Absolutely. But another spoiler here is that there's something that holds people leaders back from even starting to flex their superpower. Is not having the right tools and technologies in place, is that what it is, or is it something else?
I think that is definitely part of it. It's having, you know, a deep understanding of the business, having a voice and a point of view of how your work impacts the bottom line of the business, and the ability to come forward with ideas that allows functions, G&A functions like HR, but also IT and finance to be able to do more with less. And technology is the biggest enabler of that.
I love that. Thank you for that. Well, my next question for you here, Darcy, what has been the best thing you've seen come out of the HR community in the past year?
One of the things that I've been very excited about is HR's ramped up focus on technology and efficiency. And I've been very encouraged by what I've seen in AI. I know you guys recently did a podcast on that, and Rippling is certainly incorporating AI into a number of our modules that have repetitive tasks. But again, I think it all gets to showing that HR and again, IT and finance together have a seat at the table to drive more efficiency across an organization, as opposed to just making employees feel great and focused on the employee experience. At the end of the day, we need to do both.
Awesome. What is something you have recently learned about yourself that you feel has made you into an even better leader?
You know, I read that question and I didn't have a really great answer. I kind of honed in on this last question that you had about a piece of advice. If I think about myself as sort of what makes me an effective leader, I guess I just go back to the fact that I I really think of myself as a continuous student. You know, I'm definitely a subscriber to the view that the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know, which makes me quite curious. And I tend to have a growth mindset around this stuff. And I love working with people who also have a growth mindset. So it's never a problem that you don't know something. It's always just an opportunity to go deeper.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that. And then, of course, this final question here, what is the best piece of advice that you've received in your career and could pass along to HR and recruiting professionals?
I tend to think about advice that I've gotten in my career in terms of how relevant is it to me in that moment, and what is the shelf life of that advice or the longevity of it? Like, has it served me in different ways over the years? And there are a couple of things that I have either, you know, have just I've heard or have been given to me directly. One is this idea that what gets us here isn't what's going to get us to the next step. Or said differently, like what got me here to this role isn't going to be what gets me to the next level in my career. And I think it takes a lot of introspection and candid conversations and courage to be able to shed behaviors that have not proven to be effective or are no longer proving to be effective. And then doubling down on both things that are helpful to getting people to the next level, or are new skills or attitudes that you can construct. Looking out, almost like recreating a new mental model for how someone is going to take the next step in their career. So that's one piece of advice, I guess, that I have received and I think I have certainly given and has been effective. And the other piece that I have, I often talk about is this idea of what are the unwritten rules of our job description? Because especially earlier in careers, like we tend to think about, okay, here are the precise things that I need to deliver. Here are the things that are, you know, on my job description, whether you physically have a job description or not. These are the things that I understand to be true about my role. And I do think there are these inflection points that people have in their careers where perhaps they become a new manager, or they take on responsibility for a different team, or they, you know, they potentially move locations, or the context in which they're operating changes. They go through a merger or an acquisition, and the job description changes, meaning what's expected of them from their managers and the leadership of the organization has shifted, but the employee may or may not know that. And so this, I think the discipline of continuously asking yourself every quarter or so, what are the unwritten rules of my job description now? What are the unwritten, what are the things that are expected of me that may not be, have been articulated to me, is a really good discipline to have, and keeps us fresh. And if whatever answer you come up with, even if it's, I actually don't know, it proves to be a great conversation to have with your manager to be able to ask the question and get the feedback before people get the feedback more formally. So those are two things that have proved helpful to me in my career.
I love that. Great advice all around the board. Thank you so much for sharing that. And of course, Darcy, thank you so much for your time. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation and I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been great to talk to you, Bianca. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. And to our audience, thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, you can always keep up with our latest episodes on LinkedIn and X at HR Daily Advisor. And the full library of HR Works are now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Audible. We're also regularly uploading to our HR Daily Advisor YouTube channel. And again, I'm Bianca Heron. I hope you found at least one gem in our conversation that works for you and your organization. Take care.